This is Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. An international group of 37 anti-war activists left Amman, Jordan this morning for Baghdad to act as human shields. This group follows another group of 63 human shields who entered Iraq over the weekend after traveling in a convoy of buses through Europe. Rafael Kraft met them in Amman.
From his portrait on the wall of a second-class hotel conference room from Amman, King Abdullah keeps a watchful eye on the crowd of journalists that gathered to listen to a group of 37 peace activists en route to Baghdad. Near King Abdullah's portrait, a banner written in Catalan language, Aturem la guerra, stop the war, posted by the Spanish members of a delegation represented by volunteers coming from 10 different countries, such as United States, England and France. They are human shields. As Australian spokesperson of the group, Donna Mulhern, explains, they travelled to Iraq to put their lives on the line.
One of the main aims is to act as a deterrence against any military attack on Iraq by physically placing ourselves as foreigners in strategic locations throughout Iraq. Second goal, I think, is to just be in Iraq at this time with the Iraqi people and to stand in solidarity with them and let them know that we are their friends and we are there with them.
What do you mean by strategic locations?
Well, locations that may be under threat from bombing, from any US-led attack, such as hospitals, schools, factories, bridges, perhaps.
The 37 activists come from a wide political spectrum united by the same goal, showing solidarity to the Iraqi people in protest against any US-led military action in Iraq. Tom Cahill is a US Air Force veteran, a veteran for peace.
I can't think of such a stronger statement to make to my fellow countrymen than to join the human shields in Iraq. I have long been deeply ashamed of my country, and especially as a veteran, a military veteran, I've long felt totally betrayed by my country. When a soldier or an airman or a marine betrays his country, he's shot. But what happens when a country betrays a person, you know? What can we do?
Esdin and José are French trade union workers from the General Confederation of Workers, the biggest trade union in France. They're fathers of 9 and 11 years old kids.
We are here to support people in Iraq because they are suffering. But we are also here to show the world that we represent the workers.
So what do you think about Mr. Jacques Chirac's position on the war?
No doubt it's for money. No doubt it's for money.
Esdin heads the French delegation.
Girl, America, it's very beautiful. Mero capitalist American and the bush, it's very, very bad. I'm sorry.
Human shield, we will not yield. We stand hand in hand between life and death. It is our will to save life, not to kill, and we proclaim with every breath, not in our name.
Carl Dallas is a British songwriter. He's 72, making him the oldest among the human shields. Aren't you a bit afraid to get there and get bombed?
I have to answer sincerely, no. I'm a Christian and I'm in the hands of God. And if he wants me, he can take me next second. And if he doesn't, nothing can kill me. I'm not a Muslim, but that's a very Muslim sort of attitude. I'm more afraid of how I'm going to cope with people dead and dying around me.
And God does not see you as a suicidal?
No, I intend to come back.
Until now, the human shields do not know where they will put their lives on the line, nor can they explain much about the Iraqi governmental association Friendship, Peace and Solidarity that will help them choose the civilian locations. The association is headed by former Iraqi ambassador to Germany, Abdelrazek Hashimi. Going through official channels of Iraqi dictatorial regime is obligatory and sometimes a dilemma for peace activists and journalists willing to go and witness the consequences of a war in Iraq. Asked about the channel through which they will inform the B-52s about their locations as human shields, will inform the media, they say. For Pacifica's Peace Watch, I'm Raphael Kraft in Amman.
A broad coalition of protesters flooded the streets of Philadelphia over the weekend. Students for Peace, Vets for Peace, Quakers for Peace, all chanting, "Drop Bush, not bombs." They came from as far away as Spain. Drums and cymbals rang out and the chants went up. The rally was organized by PRAN, Philadelphia Regional Anti-War Network. In sub-freezing temperatures and snow, 10,000 gathered to show their opposition to war against Iraq. Habibi Ali was among the speakers.
I am an American, and I am a Muslim by choice. And there's a war on Islam around the world, and particularly in the United States of America. There's a war on Islam. I know right now a Muslim woman who was locked up 2 days ago, Sister Saida Quay, who is a principal of the Sister Claire Muhammad School for 15 years, never been in trouble a day in her life, serving 2 to 5. Why? Because there's a war against Islam. I don't think that if we were at war against Islam, starting with Iraq, starting with Afghanistan, starting with any and everything that have to do with peace, when are we as a people going to stop letting the politicians, letting us use God to wage war? We are not about bloodshed. There's a Patriot Act that we have to abolish in the United States. We have to abolish the Patriot Act in Philadelphia on the 6th of March. You need to join us right here in City Hall and City Council to tell them no Patriot Act. We all know that the Constitution was not written for people of color and for women, but they had to give it to us anyway. We're talking about having rights for people in Iraq when you're destroying the damn rights of the people of the United States of America every day.
Habibi Ali, Dante Toza of Radio Volta in West Philadelphia prepared that segment. Last month's World Social Forum saw participants arrive from around the world to express their concerns about the growing pace of globalization and a U.S.-led invasion into Iraq. Many participants came from the developing world with a global message of no to war with Iraq. Arundhati Roy, a Booker Prize winner and frequent critic of U.S. policy, spoke with KPFK Los Angeles correspondent Sonali Kalhatar in Porto Alegre last month. They spoke of the growing critical mass protesting policy around the world and the chaos that could result from another Persian Gulf War.
In this new anti-war movement that's developing in the United States, there's a large number of people who feel like, okay, this war, coming war in Iraq, is a terrible thing and we have to work against it. And if the U.S. were to back off, then things would be back to normal because we'd be living in our benevolent empire, if you will. How do you respond to things like that?
First of all, the war against Iraq isn't just beginning. It's already 10 years old, and it's been bombed, I think, more than Vietnam, you know. And the sanctions against Iraq are killing people every day. And it's a cruel, horrible war that's happening. And right now, the plan is only to escalate it, not to start another war. So we can't forget that what you need to do is to say stop the sanctions. And then again, Iraq is just one extreme example of what one of the many tentacles of empire is doing. And there is this sense in which it has more or less declared that it's going to dominate the world by force. And that is going to end badly for America and for Americans, maybe not today, but in some years from now, because you can't do that. You can't put a plastic bag over the world and prevent billions of people from breathing. It's going to blow open, and none of us can control the ways in which it's going to blow open. These fights that emerge from places like Porto Alegre are the voice of civilization. But if they are not heard, then you hear the voice of terrorism, fascism, bigotry, which will rush in to take that space. So these voices have to be heard, and heard quickly.
In your work in India as a writer, and also with, for example, the Narmada Dam projects fighting against that. How do you relate the struggles within India to the larger war on Iraq?
Well, you see, the struggle in countries like India, you know, India is caught in a situation right now which is a situation between the horrific effects of a corrupt and undemocratic state and then this whole push for the alternative, which they say is privatization, which is depriving even more people of lands and livelihoods. So it's like having an illness and then being given a medicine that makes that illness even worse and being told that that's a cure. And in that process of dispossession, of course, these struggles have begun to move from fighting huge state projects to fighting privatization, which are actually huge state projects. But really, one big problem in India that nobody in the world seems to be picking up on is the terrifying growth of Hindu fascism. And now there is a nexus growing between Israel and India. And these are two countries, I think the only two countries in the world that are ambivalent in terms of the war against Iraq, because Hindu fascism is really gaining momentum there, especially after the massacre of Muslims in Gujarat, which was like India's Kristallnacht, propelled the Nazis into power. The same thing, much worse in a way, happened in Gujarat in May. 2,000 Muslims were massacred, 150,000 driven from their homes. The economic base of the Muslim community was destroyed. And then the government that supervised that pogrom was elected back to power in January.
Speaking of the Muslim world, there was very little coverage, at least in the United States, of the massacre of Muslims in India. It may not have been a convenient time to show Muslims as the victims, and even with the war in Afghanistan, it was portrayed as a war of liberation, and the anti-war movement and the left in the United States did not raise as much of a fuss. How do we overcome this corporate blackout, if you will, that is insisting on portraying Muslims as demons?
Well, the only way to overcome it is to do what you're doing and what I'm doing and what hundreds of others should be doing, which is eventually to tell our stories, and those stories will be heard, because if the corporate media continues to ignore these stories, if the corporate media wants to act as if Porto Alegre and the World Social Forum didn't happen, at some point the corporate media will become irrelevant. At some point it will lift off the wounded world like a scab, and it will just become boardroom bulletins, you know, and we have to work towards that.
You started out as a fiction writer and moved very quickly into taking a very strong political stand, which has influenced a lot of people worldwide, especially those on the left. Within India, what has your reception been? Certainly we know that you yourself were arrested at one point around the Narmada Dam issue and that particular incident. Is there movement in India that is more likely to embrace the information and ideas that you're putting out, or are we seeing reactionary forces grow?
But both things are true. I cannot emphasize enough the chill in the air because of the growth of fascism. Last night, after the incredible march and, you know, the closing plenary at the World Social Forum, I rang a friend of mine in Madhya Pradesh to say, you know, to squeak to her about how wonderful it was. And she said, thank you for calling, because just this morning, 100,000 people of the RSS, which is this right-wing Hindu guild, marched with swords through the town. At the same time, the fact is that there are many, many people's movements in India which are quite scattered now. They have to get together to form a real alternative to what is going on, because really the problem in India today is not so much the problem of governance as the fact that there is no opposition. There is no political vision that is set against fascism in the mainstream political world. The Congress Party is just the B team. It has the same economic agenda, it has the same, you know, sort of underplayed communal agenda. It did not campaign in Gujarat against the riots, you know, riots, we shouldn't call it, against the pogrom. So we need a real opposition with a real alternative point of view. There is an alternative point of view, but it's not, those organizations have always stayed away from mainstream politics because it's such a filthy game. But they have to get there, and they will soon. I know that there is an incipient boiling and churning that is happening. So as far as my writing is concerned, I think obviously I'm reviled and made fun of and imprisoned and all that by one lot. On the other hand, I don't think any writer could be embraced and loved and passed from arm to arm by the other side, as I am, you know. So it's a war, it's a war.
Going back to the issue of war and empire, we see what I call the rhetoric of liberation coming out of the talking heads of empire, and that's the way in which it tends to be sold to the masses so that they can quell their consciences, that we are going to liberate these people, and hence that, you know, hence this war should commence. How do we convince the public, the majority of the public, and maybe if you can send a message to U.S. readers who may read your work and like it, that the rhetoric of liberation is something that needs to be overcome.
Killing people to save them from dictatorships or from corrupt ideologies is an old U.S. government sport. They've killed millions of people to save them from communists in Vietnam and Indonesia. In Chile, on the 11th of September 1973, the CIA backed a coup that removed Allende from power and installed a military dictator. And Henry Kissinger said, why should Chile be allowed to go Marxist just because of the stupidity of its people? So you can kill people because they have a democracy, then you can kill people because they have a dictatorship, and you can kill people because there's internal dissent. It's the most absurd thing I've ever heard. You know, they sent a U.S. bombed Afghanistan to liberate Afghan women. Did anybody bomb America to give women the vote? Are they going to bomb the caste system out of India? Are they going to come and bomb Gujarat now that we have fascists killing Muslims there? What a ridiculous product to sell. It really is sad that they can have such contempt for people that they can sell this garbage, you know, and that people buy it. You drop the nuclear bomb in Japan eventually, you know, not on Germany. But it's every, you know, the entire imperial exercise is based on racism.
Award-winning author and social critic Arundhati Roy speaking with Sonali Kolhatkar at the World Social Forum in Brazil.
And then there's this anonymous poem printed in the Industrial Worker, April 14th, 1917.
Peace Watch commentator Utah Phillips.
I love my flag. I love my flag, I do, which floats upon the breeze. I also love my arms and legs, my neck and nose and knees. One little shell might spoil them all, or give them such a twist they would be of no use to me. I guess I won't enlist. Oh, I love my country, yes I do. I hope her folks do well. Without our arms and legs and things, I think we'd look like hell. Young men with faces half shot off are unfit to be kissed. I've read in books it spoils their looks. I guess I won't enlist.
Peace Watch commentator Utah Phillips.
Oh, I marched to the Battle of New Orleans at the end of the early British wars. The young land started growing, the young blood started flowing, but I ain't a marching anymore. For I killed my share of engines in 1,000 different fights. I was there at the Little Big Horn. I heard many men lying, I saw many more dying, but I ain't a marching anymore. It's always the old to lead us to the wars, always the young to fall. Now look at all we've won with the saber and the gun. Tell me, is it worth it all? For I stole California from the Mexican land. Fought in the bloody Civil War. Yes, I even killed my brothers and so many others, but I ain't marching anymore. For I marched to the battles of the German trench in a war that was bound to end all wars. Oh, I must have killed a million men, and now they want me back again, but I ain't marching anymore. It's always the old to lead us to the wars, always the young to fall. Now look at all we've won with the saber and the gun. Tell me, is it worth it all? For I flew the final mission in the Japanese skies, set off the mighty mushroom roar. When I saw the cities burning, I knew that I was learning that I ain't marching anymore. Now the labor leaders screaming when they close a missile plant. United Fruit screams at the Cuban shore. Call it peace or call it treason, call it love or call it reason, but I ain't marching anymore. No, I ain't marching anymore.
Finally tonight, Washington, D.C. performance political activist Funkus Velvet.
Several years ago, I came in contact with the ideas of karma. Karma means cause and effect. It's in Buddhism. And as I look around and see us going towards war, I began to reflect deeply on my own life, because I spent 4 years in the military, 4 years with an M16, 4 years blinded by the illusion that I was justified to take life, to kill, to murder, justified in the name of God, in the name of country. It is your duty, son, were the words that I would hear echoing. So I stood up, placed my hand on my heart, and I pledged allegiance to this illusion. This illusion that is based on fear, hunger, animality, an illusion of tribalism. Us against them, not realizing and seeing the whole. The seeds of war, of conflict, are in all of us. We all share the same reality. We have created it together. We have created it together. It is not one man to blame. It is a failure to recognize that there is only one life, one breath, one earth. We have forgotten the first connection to our mother. And it says, when the mother's heart is in her chest pointed to the sky, the land prospers. But when her heart is on the ground being trampled, the land perishes. So I want to leave you these words. A warrior receives the gift of life and establishes life everywhere. Love is life. It is the essence of divine plan.
performance artist and political activist Funkus Velvet. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. by Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. We had production assistance from Adil Hamad of KPFA and Benta Brooklyn. Thanks to Pete Caracas, RadioForAll.net, and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. Special thanks also to our consulting producers, Larry Binsky and Sam Husseini. Copies of this program can be ordered from the Pacifica Radio Archives by visiting the website at pacificaarchives.org or by calling 1-800-735-0230. That's 1-800-735-0230. If you'd like to support this type of programming, we urge you to visit pacifica.org and make a pledge through our secure online website. Or you can send your donations to Pacifica Radio, 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. That's 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. You can send us your feedback to peacewatch@pacifica.org. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.